Right now, hidden deep beneath the canopy of an African tropical forest, there's a rugged little microphone recording.
Yeah, just silently running 24/7.
Exactly. It captures a raindrop hitting a fern, an insect buzzing past the casing, and then faintly, through the dense trees, you hear the low-frequency rumble of a forest elephant.
It's an amazing image, really.
It is.
Oh.
Welcome back to Machines Learning, the daily deep dive, where we take one fresh machine learning and AI paper and translate it for thoughtful, curious people like you.
We are two hosts looking at one paper and absolutely no math required.
None at all. We just want to give you a clear look at where the field is actually heading. You don't need a PhD to be curious about this stuff. Now, if you've been with us for the last 2 days, you're going to immediately notice a major change of pace today.
Oh, definitely. A huge pivot.
Right? Because episodes 1 and 2 were completely immersed in the digital realm. We were talking about AI agents, keeping them safe from attack with a claw guard, and preventing their memories from drifting with Memo Bench.
Yeah, it was all very cyber, very theoretical and internal to the machines.
Exactly. But today, we're zooming out completely, because AI isn't just chatbots and digital agents living in some server farm anymore. Right now, there are microphones hidden in tropical forests using machine learning to count chimpanzees, elephants, and rare birds.
And that count is incredibly important. It's increasingly the basis for real money decisions about habitat conservation.
Yeah, this isn't just academic curiosity. So today's paper is called Deep Forest Sound, published in April 2026. The mission today is to understand how this specific model solves this massive bottleneck of counting endangered species in the wild. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it. So to understand why deep forest sound is such a breakthrough, we really have to look at the physical reality of the data collection. The technique is called passive acoustic monitoring, or PAM for short.
Passive acoustic monitoring. Okay, so what does deploying a PAM network actually look like?
Well, it's elegantly simple, honestly. Researchers take these rugged, weatherproof microphones, strap them to trees in a dense forest, and then they just walk away.
They just leave them there.
Yeah, for months at a time. The microphones record continuously. Every weather event, every bug, and crucially, every animal vocalization. It's totally passive. So you avoid sending humans thrashing through the underbrush, which, usually scares the animals away anyway.
Right, you just let the forest be the forest and you listen. Which sounds so idyllic right up until you do the math on the data.
Oh, the data volume is a nightmare.
I mean, the paper points out that a single PAM station produces about 240 hours of audio every single month.
Yeah.
That's 10 days of continuous sound per microphone. And they deploy dozens of these things.
Right, you're instantly drowning in thousands of hours of audio.
It totally reminds me of setting up a security camera in a mostly empty warehouse and just leaving it running. Like, capturing the video is cheap, but the bottleneck is finding some poor human willing to sit in a chair and watch a week of tape just to see if a mouse ran across the floor.
That is the perfect analogy. For ecologists, the bottleneck is turning thousands of hours of chaotic ambient noise into actual actionable animal counts. Historically, they had to hire highly trained bioacousticians to just sit with headphones on, waiting for a fraction of a second where a chimp might call out.
That does not scale at all.
It doesn't. It's painfully slow and financially ruinous. So naturally, machine learning stepped in. But up until recently, the AI approach had a massive flaw when you apply it to these specific African forests.
Wait, I would assume we already have AI for this. I mean, my phone can identify a song in a noisy coffee shop. Why couldn't they just download an off-the-shelf generalist AI model trained on nature sounds?
So those generalist models are impressive, but they have a fatal blind spot. They are mostly trained on millions of bird vocalizations.
Oh, it's birds.
Mostly, yeah. Because birds are loud, they live near humans, and amateur bird watchers upload tons of labeled audio to the internet. So the AI gets amazingly good at identifying birds. But the species that matter most for high-stakes conservation in these localized forests are usually not birds.
All right, we're talking about non-avian taxa. Great apes, elephants.
Exactly. And the generalist models underperform terribly on those local mammal populations because they just haven't heard enough of them. A model that is a world-class expert on a North American blue jay has absolutely no idea what to do with the low-frequency rumble of a forest elephant in Uganda.
Okay, so generalist models fail on the mammals,
yeah.
Which brings us to the core challenge of the Deep Forest Sound paper. How do you build a specialist model for this one specific Ugandan forest without starting from scratch? Because training a massive AI from scratch costs, what, millions of dollars?
Oh, yeah, millions. And computing power that a university ecology department just does not have. So instead of starting over, the researchers started with a base model called an audio spectrogram transformer, or an AST.
Okay, an AST. Whenever I hear transformer in AI, my mind goes to large language models or computer vision. Are they converting the audio into an image?
You are spot on, yes. Instead of feeding the AI raw audio waves, it converts the sound into a spectrogram.
Right, like those graphs where time is on the bottom, pitch goes up, and volume is the bright colors.
Exactly. It's essentially a photograph of sound. The AI looks at the chimpanzee call as if it were a specific shape in a digital image. And this base AST model is huge. It has 88 million parameters. It already understands the physics of sound, overlapping frequencies, all of that.
But we already established that a general understanding of sound doesn't help you find an elephant. How did they teach this 88 million parameter monster about African animals without paying to retrain the whole thing?
This is the really clever part. They used a technique called LoRA, which stands for Low Rank Adaptation. They took that massive base model and froze almost all of its 88 million parameters.
Wait, froze them? Like locked them down?
Locked them down. So the model wouldn't forget its basic understanding of sound. And then they injected just over a million brand new trainable parameters using LoRA.
Oh, wow. Okay, I want to make sure I have the right mental model for this.
Yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. It's like taking a brilliant, worldly linguist who understands grammar perfectly. You tell them to change absolutely nothing about how they understand language, but you hand them a tiny one-page cheat sheet for local Ugandan forest slang.
Yes, that is exactly what LoRA does.
You don't teach them verbs from scratch, you just give them the local context.
And that linguist doesn't spend years relearning how to speak, they just use the cheat sheet. To train those million new parameters, they used acoustic data from Kibale National Park, targeting 12 specific species, and they used a semi-supervised pipeline.
Which means they clustered unannotated recordings and a human just validated the clusters.
Exactly. They didn't have to listen to the whole tape, just a tiny sample of a mathematical cluster to verify it. Now, before LoRA, people used to adapt frozen models using something called linear probing.
Okay, how is that different?
Linear probing is like having a brilliant analyst do all the complex thinking, but they have to hand their final report to a clerk who only has a yes or no stamp. The colt can't ask questions or adjust the focus.
Ah, so it's a bottleneck at the very end of the process.
Right. But LoRA Kara injects those tiny parameters deeply throughout the model's layers, so it can actually adjust its attention to focus on the low frequency bands where an elephant rumble might be hiding under the sound of rain.
Okay, but a rainstorm in a jungle is acoustically chaotic. Did this little million parameter cheat sheet actually work?
Oh, the results were incredible. Deep forest sound beat the generalist models on 8 out of the 12 target species.
Really? Wow. Did it fix the blind spot with the mammals?
That's the best part. The largest gains were exactly where generalists struggled most, non-avian taxa. It achieved an average precision of 0.964 for primates and 0.961 for elephants.
And just to clarify, an average precision of 1.0 is perfect.
Yes. Hitting above 0.96 means it is exceptionally accurate at isolating those specific animal calls from all that chaotic background noise. It proved that LoRA totally outperforms linear probing in these environments.
That's wild. So if it works this well in Kibale National Park, can we just drop this exact deep forest sound model into, say, the Amazon and immediately start counting jaguars?
Well, no. And what's fascinating here is the researcher's incredible restraint. We call it honest scoping. In AI, papers constantly claim they've solved everything everywhere. But these researchers explicitly say this model only works within the same ecosystem.
I really respect that scientific humility. But how do you prove it works if you strictly confine it to one location?
You test it against time. They evaluated the model on a totally independent data set recorded 2 full years later at different microphone locations, but still strictly within that same Ugandan forest.
Oh, I see. So it proves it generalizes across time, handling the way a forest's acoustic profile drifts over a couple of years.
Exactly. It generalizes locally, but it's not universal.
Okay, so let's bring this back to you, the listener. Why do these specific numbers matter to you? Well, because 6 of those 12 monitored species are actually on the IUCN Red List of threatened species. We are talking about animals teetering on the edge of vanishing. Knowing exactly where they are is the only way to protect them. But, the impact goes way beyond just knowing the numbers, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. These accurate local counts are becoming the gears of a massive global financial system.
Okay, how so?
To understand it, we need to look at a powerful cross-domain connection. Passive acoustic monitoring is essentially the machine learning descendant of satellite remote sensing.
Okay, walk me through that. Strapping a mic to a tree versus launching a satellite.
Think about carbon credit markets. Billions of dollars flow through them, and they run almost entirely on satellite data. Satellites like Landsat capture imagery, AI detectors count how many trees were cut down, and that count becomes the measurement layer that financial markets depend on to buy and sell carbon credits.
Ah, I get it. And you're saying that PAM's becoming that exact same measurement layer, but for biodiversity markets.
Precisely. Biodiversity credit markets are being built right now. Both are sensor networks producing fundamental measurements. Both face the generalist versus specialist trade-off. And both battle temporal drift to forest looks and sounds different 2 years later.
Okay, I buy the structural analogy, but I have to push back here.
Sure.
The analogy seems to break down when we talk about accountability. If carbon markets use satellites, I mean, anyone with a computer can theoretically pull public Landsat imagery to verify if a forest is still standing. But who can verify this audio? I can't just log into a public database and download 200 hours of Kibali National Park ambient noise.
You've hit the exact fault line. The analogy breaks down on verification economics. Satellite imagery is public. You can reprocess it. But PAM data, that is privately held by the research group or NGO deploying the microphones.
So we just have to take their word for it. We trust their specialized AI heard an elephant, and then that unverified claim generates a biodiversity credit worth millions.
It's a profound vulnerability, and it actually ties perfectly into the running thread of our first few deep dives.
All right.
In episode one, with ClawGuard, we argued that real safety in AI comes from architectural constraints, not just behavioral training. You can't just tell an AI to be safe.
Right.
And in episode two, with Memo Bench, we extended that to memory. You need architectural checks so the AI doesn't quietly drift and forget its purpose. Well, today extends that frame again to measurement itself.
Because a benchmark score, like that 0.964 precision, that's just a behavioral check.
Exactly. It's a behavioral check in a controlled environment. But when the AI detector is the measurement layer moving global capital, what is the architectural equivalent of an independent audit?
If the audio is private, how do we trust the math?
The answer has to be a fully reproducible pipeline with raw data retention. You can't just publish the final count. You have to design a system where independent auditors can access the raw acoustic data, run the exact same AI pipeline, and verify the work.
Without that, you're building a global financial instrument on a totally unverified foundation.
Exactly.
Man, it really leaves you with something to chew on.
Yeah.
We started out talking about tracking chimpanzees and ended up discussing the architecture of trust for global markets. If we are building financial markets based on an AI's ability to hear an elephant in a private recording from 2 years ago who was auditing the AI's hearing, we are putting immense trust in these localized parameters without a standardized public framework to double-check their work.
It's a huge question for the field moving forward.
Definitely. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Reminder, this is a daily show. That's Machines Learning. See you tomorrow.